She's April.
And she's Molly.
And we are
the Book Besties. These are boobs. Like, these are boobs. Which boobs would you like today?
I love my little potatoes.
How about I lick a tangerine?
Jin's obsession with coconuts cracks me up for no reason. No, I think you've made it. I think the book means you've made it, April.
Why did I get this, Scholastic? Why?
It looks like a good book.
I think so, too. I got an ARC for Ryan Selznick's new book that comes out in April, Run Away With Me.
I did not get this book.
So I don't know how Scholastic got my physical mailing address, like, to my house.
Yeah, that is creepy. It's not like we have a P.O. box.
No. I don't know if maybe they have the same, like, marketing team as, like, we've been sent ARCs in the past.
Who's his agent? Are we working with his agent?
Well, that I don't know.
I wonder who his agent is. Because his agent could be another author we've been working with's agent.
Like maybe Chessie's?
Maybe Chessie's.
Because this is YA.
It could be Chessie.
But Chessie's not published through Scholastic.
Well, but there's a lot of different agents that work with a lot of different companies too, right?
I mean, looking at their national marketing campaign, because this would be logically why I would have gotten this. Mm-hmm. Major pre-publication buzz campaign, national publicity and review campaign, national author tour, extensive consumer advertising, influencer promotions.
That's us.
NetGalley promotions.
There it is.
Trade and educator advertising.
You're also merchandise, on that list.
Merchandising kit for bookstores and libraries. Social media assets. Feature at teen festivals.
They're
feature
putting a
at educator and this. Librarian conferences. It goes on.
Well, you are a librarian too. You do check a lot of boxes, April.
Yes, but my mailing address, my home address, this didn't come to the library.
You're
this came to me.
You're worried that Scholastic is stalking you?
Do you think maybe it's Cece Harrington?
Maybe.
Because she's published through Scholastic.
That makes sense.
It could be.
Let's see if it's, we'll look later and see if Cece and her have, and this person have the same agent.
Well, this is Brian Selznick's first queer book. And it comes out in April. I don't know anything else about it. I will be perfectly honest with you. I have not heard of this book. But I do like Brian Selznick. So I guess I will read this. So thank you, Scholastic, for the ARC. I will read it and give an honest review.
I mean, yeah.
It won't take me very long because Brian Selznick writes very thick novels. But there are a lot of pictures in them because he's an illustrator too. One is not thick, but I bet the actual print version will be.
She's a thicky thick trick.
I don't know. I got mailed a physical ARC that I did not request. So
it's a weird day. There was like a lunar eclipse. The energy out in the world is weird. Everybody at the grocery store was weird. I don't know.
My arms are so tired because I have been weeding, shifting, and shelf reading the nonfiction section at work.
The picture of books you sent us.
That wasn't even close to what I actually got rid of. Today I discarded 30 James Patterson books and highlight of my career.
Deleted.
It was the highlight of my career.
I'm telling you, it's the Lord's work getting rid of James Patterson out there. And I don't believe in a lot of things, but I do believe getting rid of mass production and bringing in more original content is the Lord's work.
The irony is, I am not a fan of James Patterson. Like, I'm not at all. That's not ironic. The irony is, I always have such an issue because he's in every section of the library. Mm-hmm. And the last book in the nonfiction section today was a James Patterson.
That man, James, my guy.
The end of the 900s.
You need to get fucked. Okay? You don't need your name on everything. You
what
don't
bothers me about James Patterson, besides the fact that he takes up a significant amount of shelf space,
yeah, he does.
Is that there are a lot of marginalized authors that write for him.
Yeah.
And they don't ever, their name is never on the book. It's always James Patterson. Now, he has a few
and
that he's written with.
And then a tiny print their name.
Sometimes, but sometimes their name's not on there at all. And some of them, they get more notoriety than that, but it's still a James Patterson book. It still goes with the Pattersons. And he had the audacity, the confidence of mediocre white man is what he had. He had the audacity in 2020 to say something along the lines of, it was a hard time to be a white man in publishing.
He's so gross. He's so gross. Like,
so
in a world of Pattersons, be a Brandon Sanderson.
Yeah, right.
Be a Brandon Sanderson, man.
So all that aside, we are here today to talk. Huh?
I was like, speaking of Brandon Sanderson, did I send you that TikTok about him?
Did you send me a TikTok about him?
About the girl that was in the
I sent aisle? You that.
I don't even know what day it is sometimes. It's, I went.
We're going to talk about this book, A Tempest of Tea by Hafsa Faisal. Molly has the paperback with the sprayed edges. I have the hardback original print that I bought for half price at the end of last year from Barnes & Noble's half price sale. And this is the first time we've read a Hafsa Faisal. It is a YA, and she has several books. And this is actually going to be a duology. It seems to be her niche that she writes duologies.
Yeah.
And the second one comes out in, I think, September.
I've seen a lot of good things about the We Hunt the Flame that's on the back of this.
Yeah.
Like, A Tempest has been on my TBR for a hot minute, though.
So like, that's interesting because I put this on pod because I saw it on the new book stand at my library. It came out before I started working there, so I'm not the one that actually ordered it. But when I saw it on the new books display, I was like, that cover is pretty. I would like to read it. I had no idea what this book was about. And it wasn't until we get into it that I realized that that was blood in the cup. Because they're vampires.
Right. But
no idea.
And this is our female lead. But did either of us put that math together?
Well, I put together that she was the female lead.
Right, but the blood and her.
Yeah, I didn't. I knew she was serving blood. Anyway, let's do a synopsis so we can actually have this conversation. Sound good?
Ooh, yeah.
Spindrift Tea House is the best tea house on this end of White Roaring. Its proprietors are Arthi and Jin, ruthless rulers of the streets who carry on normal business by day and run a bloodhouse for vampires by night. Mm-hmm. Arthi and Jin are kin by choice after being orphaned as kids. Both are immigrants to White Roaring and stick out because of the color of their skin. When Arthi is approached off guard, approached by guard Laith, a captain in. I think I meant caught off guard. Let me try that sentence again.
You're fine. I do it all the time.
When Arthi is caught off guard by Laith, a captain of the Horned Guard, with an opportunity to steal back a ledger belonging to the Ram, which is like their king,
right?
In order to save the Spindrift from his clutches, they form a crew of five to make the job happen. In addition to Arthi, Jin, and Laith, Flick, a forager who is the adopted daughter of a prominent woman, and Mateo, a vampire who would prefer to keep that a secret, form a plan to sneak into the Aetherium during a gala event and steal the ledger. The problem is that the Aetherium happens to be the wealthiest bloodhouse for vampires. The book is
Aetherium. Aetherium in the audiobook.
Aetherium. Okay, that works. I never knew how to say it because I was reading the physical book.
I wouldn't have
Aetherium.
Either.
That's a good way to say it, Etheria. Yeah. This book is a lot of setup and a tremendous amount of characters, but the story takes readers on a journey they'll want to stay on. Yeah. Or at least that's my opinion. I want to stay on that
journey. It's like Ocean's 11 and Peaky Blinders and like Pretty Little Liars too.
I felt like it was a lot like Six of Crows, but
I've never read that.
Yeah, I know you haven't. So I've read all of the Grishaverse by Leigh Bardugo. If you haven't read them, they're fantastic. I know that there are a lot of fans of that series that particularly like Six of Crows and Crooked Kingdom. They like those two best. They were my least favorite because I don't really like the darkness in them. Mm. But I felt like this, which was definitely inspired by it. We get there's questions from fans on her Goodreads page that she's answered. And one was like, who is an inspiring author to you? And Leigh Bardugo is one of them. So I actually think that she did a really good job with this book. And the reason I think that I liked it better than Six of Crows was not necessarily because the writing was better, because I don't know that it was probably about the same, but it was more that this story didn't live inside the world of another story.
Yeah.
The Grishaverse, those two books from the Grishaverse, like there are seven books in the Grishaverse, Six of Crows and Crooked Kingdom, they don't fit into any of the rest of the story. They basically just have Grisha. The last two in the series, which are actually my favorite, King of Scars, that duology, that character is in the original trilogy. So like it flows, but they don't with Six Crows. So I think this was better for me because it didn't try to fit into another world. I've been talking a lot. I feel like I need
to stop. You're okay. I don't know that series to compare, you know?
But I feel like our listeners will. So that's why I'm going to go with that.
That's okay.
All right. So this book is fantasy, paranormal, something along those veins. And it's YA. So there is a lot of setup and world building in this book. I want to know how you felt Hafsa Faisal did with the world building and the setup.
I struggled with this book. I'm not going to lie. Like, there's a lot going on. And the world building goes slow. And we're slowly getting points of views and the world build through those points of views as we go. I actually, for the first time ever, went from 1.0 to 1.5 in my audiobook. Because that's how slow this book was going for me.
I find that to be really interesting because I thought she did a fantastic job with world building.
I mean, I don't hate it. It dragged for me for no apparent reason. It was just hard for me to stay in this world. Her writing is beautiful. Her thoughts, her process, what she's trying to say, really beautiful. The stories are great. And Jin's obsession with coconuts cracks me up for no reason. It's just, there's just little things that I'm like, why?
So I feel like maybe this is an example of like, you weren't in the headspace for it, which is how I felt. I've felt that way a few books that we've read, because this to me is very much a book that we would both enjoy. And I thought the world building was really good. It starts with a really gorgeous map. There's a beautiful map.
And we love maps here at Book Besties Gang.
We love a book map. So if you're watching online, this is the book map. And I think it's really beautiful. And I think that it set me for where I needed to go. And personally, I thought she did a great job with building this world. And I didn't want this book to only be a duology, because
that's why I feel like it's UK. Because that's like a little island.
Yeah. And then it's absolutely, I think it's a metaphor for like colonialization from the UK. But I don't want this book to be a duology, because the world that she's built, I feel like could be a longer series.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's more her like need to move on.
Well, could as be. A writer, it could be. I actually just I had lunch with Emma Barry earlier today. One of the things that we were talking about was authors that like write these like astronomically long series that like they don't seem to be good, but they sell like so well. And basically her takeaway was, you know, good for them. If right. they're going to keep selling, they might as well just keep pumping out the same thing, even if they're bored right. with it.
Well, it's Nicholas Sparks, right? Mm-hmm. Homie writes the same formula.
It's literally the same story.
Every fucking time.
Every time.
But guess what? We eat it up. We eat that shit up and we watch the movies.
I've read a few Nicholas Sparks.
They're guilty pleasures, man. I've read
maybe 4 or 5 of his. He's not my favorite, but I can shut my brain off and read him.
That's Nicholas Sparks for me, though.
But you know what pisses me off about Nicholas Sparks?
He's a white, mediocre white man.
Well, that too.
Yeah.
He is not classified as romance. He is that's classified bullshit. As fiction. And it's that's because bullshit. He's a man.
It's bullshit.
He writes chick lit.
He writes chick lit. I have
the other thing that annoys me about him is that he cheated on his wife. But, you know.
Yeah, that's whatever. Also annoying. You know what annoys me about him is, okay, I have written stories like his stories, okay? Mm-hmm. I have a book about a kid that is in the Coast Guard, and mm-hmm. he goes home because both his parents die in this terrible car accident, and he's, like, reliving the past with his high school friends. And, mm-hmm. like, it's, like, this whole thing, right? And I was talking to an agent, I won't say who, and this was back when I lived in Houston, and she goes, and I quote, women who write that kind of fiction never get anywhere.
That's true.
It's a man's world.
That's true.
And I stopped writing that book that day.
That is very true. It might be different now because
this was
romance genre is so saturated right now, and they're always looking for new voices in it. So it might be different.
She goes to that big mega church in Houston. The one that locked their doors to all of the Houstonians during Harvey.
I really have an issue with their pastor. We're going to let that go. But
we're going to let that go. But that's how I met her, through my hairdresser. And
no. Moving on. No. Okay. So I liked the world building this. I thought she did a good job. And I felt like I knew this place. Like I felt like I knew
it. Oh, yeah. I could walk down these streets. Mm-hmm. I could walk into Spindrift.
That's interesting because you're saying that, but you also said it didn't captivate you enough to keep reading. Like, you didn't want to read it.
It was the storyline, though. You know what I mean?
Like, I liked it.
I struggle with Ocean's 11. I struggle with multi-step things. It's the ADHD, you know? Like, keep it simple, stupid.
Okay. All right, when we first meet Arthi and Jin, they are at Mateo's house threatening to expose his secret life as a vampire. Yeah. They depart his house after Jin shoots Mateo in the heart. Does this setup for them to be a ruthless gang leaders hold up for the entire book?
Honestly, it was hilarious. I couldn't stop picturing Mateo as the actor that plays Klaus in the Umbrella Academy.
Yeah. That's a good
one. You know what I mean?
That's not how I pictured him, but that's a good one.
Because, like, the casualness, the snark, the just, like, this is my favorite shirt. Come on. Like, there's just no seriousness, mm-hmm. right? We like, are in Riddick. Serious, serious business.
Yeah.
And he's just like, you fucking shot me. You shot me.
I feel like the setup of them being like ruthless, you know, street gang.
Yeah.
It was very much an homage to like those kind of movies that take place in like
Peaky Blinders.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't seen Peaky Blinders, but definitely like they take place in like the 20s. Because these people are these hardcore gangsters and yet they have families and they love people and they form bonds and
they're immigrants and they're like, they're just trying to live a normal life. By the way, Spindrift, you effed me up, ma'am, with that freaking name because it is my favorite bubbly water brand.
I don't know what that is, but okay. I don't like bubbly water. Water should not be carbonated.
It's not just water, though. It's like flavors. I don't fucking know.
But the flavors in carbonated water is like, how about I lick a tangerine and then spit it into this water and that'll be the taste.
That's all they do. Spindrift is literally, excuse me, I spit. That's disgusting. Spindrift is literally like fresh fruit pulverized or whatever they do. And then they mix it with the water and put all these things in and bubble it and put it in a can. It's literally just fruit. So there's no sugar.
No. No.
Hard pass. That
sounds terrible.
It is sometimes. But I do it for my
health. Bought, like, I think it's called, like, Bubbly or Bubble or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. For the event that we had at our library with Emma Berry. And it hardly got drank. So we still have a whole bunch left over. So I was trying to use it up. And so I opened a can at the library one day. And I took half a sip and was like, bleh!
What flavor was it?
Peach?
Oh, no. No.
No. All right. Laith appears to Arthi by scaling the walls of the Spindrift, which I don't feel like she leaned enough into that story.
Right, right.
And proposing why? She help him steal the Ram's Ledger. Arthi never trusts him, but do you as a reader trust him?
No. Because we're led to not trust any government official from the beginning. Mm-hmm. So why would you come to a gangster to do this yourself? Mm-hmm. You're pretty high up in the government. You could fucking do this yourself. You don't want it.
Yeah.
You don't want it.
The thing is that I didn't trust him, but then I really started to as the book went on. I felt like
Because of Arthi's feelings, right?
Yeah, well, that's the setup, right? Arthi definitely is developing feelings for Laith, and they're complicated. I feel like Laith at the end, it's interesting because Laith and Mateo are basically both her love interests.
It's a triangle, for sure.
I think I have a question about that later, but they're basically her love interests, and both of them say the same thing to her at the end, that they're the same. And it's interesting because there are two sides to Arthi, and one of them is very much that way, and one of them is the other way.
But one meant it more heartfelt and authentic, and the other meant it as a dig.
Yeah.
You know, one was like, you're just like me. And the other one's like, you're just like me. I love you. Come on, be with me. You know, that's the vibe.
I didn't read it that way. Maybe that's how it was narrated in the audiobook, but that's not how I read it.
That's the vibe I got.
That's not how I read it. All right. So what do you think about... Oh, this is the triangle question. What do you think about the love story between Laith and Arthi? And do you think the author is setting up a triangle with Arthi, Mateo, and Laith?
The love triangle for me was too light.
Uh-huh.
I don't feel like it was heavy in the story. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it was supposed to be heavy in the story.
It's not who Arthi is, though. She's not one to have, like, a love triangle.
If we're going to make it an inconvenience, we either need to lean more into it or lean less into it.
Yeah.
I feel like where she was standing, this makes zero sense. I'm such an idiot. I feel like where she was standing in this book with this love triangle, there was not enough, but there wasn't enough taken out. If that makes sense. It distracted from the main story in a way it was supposed to, but we could have used more of the main story and less of the love triangle at points.
I definitely think it wasn't necessary. Like, I think the story between Jin and Flick, like, that makes sense.
I wanted to lean into that story.
Like, that little love story made sense to me, but I don't think that Arthi needed to have, and we've talked about this before, like, it's not every friend, male-female friend group that needs to have a love story. And honestly,
just because she's a female leader doesn't mean she needs a man.
No. No. And I don't feel like she leaned enough into it for us to get the impression that either of them would be good for Arthi.
Yes.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I think that was a misstep. I think that was a misstep in this book. I don't think it worked.
And I feel like how both are brought into her life, it is obvious that neither are good for her because one is a straight up vampire who just does whatever the fuck he wants. Mm-hmm. And the other is a government official who's gonna fucking turn on her as soon as he can.
Like, I don't know that he is. I have a feeling that we're gonna see in the second book that Laith has sort of been part of the Horned Guard and part of this life in order to overthrow it.
I want to believe that, but I don't. I want her with the vampire. I want her with her kind. You know what I mean?
I want her with Laith. So that's interesting because I wonder if we read this as teenagers. Mm-hmm. Like, let's test this. Have Piper read it.
I will.
And she wants to. And see what her perspective is, because I wonder if, because we're in our 40s.
Right.
We just can't buy into this romance. Like,
I wonder if I can get her to do a short, like, video for, like, our socials.
If you want, but we've been not putting our kids in our content. So, well,
she's 16 today,
crazy.
She is legally old enough to make those kind of decisions on her own now.
Wow, that's crazy. I'm still
tell me about it.
I'm not letting.
I was unconscious 16 years ago today.
Yeah. Great story. All right.
Good times.
Jay helps recruit Flick to be a forger for the group. It is very apparent that the two have feelings for each other, but Flick has been raised a quote-unquote lady.
Yeah.
Do you think there was enough chemistry between these two that she would abandon her upbringing?
No, but I don't feel like Flick leaving her upbringing was for Jin. I think Flick left her life because she saw the truth about her mother. As soon as she realized she was her mother's hyperfixation. Her mother adopted her, put all this attention and love into her. And as soon as her mom got a new hyperfixation, she dropped her like a fly.
And she started forging before she met Jin. Like, that's how she met him initially.
That's why she started forging, is because her mom stopped loving her.
Yeah. I don't think that I've worded this question correctly, because I don't think that the issue is that she decided to leave her life for a man. No. I think that her mom kind of abandoned her and she figured out, hey, I have this knack for things. But I do have an issue with the way that she's forging in this book. And I don't remember if I have a question later for it. So I'm just going to say it now. But this is a bell ringer for me.
Okay.
How does a girl go from forging handwriting to, like, making physical, like, forged items?
See,
that's not the same kind of forgery.
This is where, if this was on the screen, movie magic. We're just going to have a montage real fast of blowing through all this.
Like, it never explains how she went from that to forging something like the coins that they need to get in.
It's just...
Sometimes, that doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, right? Like, the love triangle. We didn't need to focus on that love triangle. Explain.
Right.
Explain yourself, ma'am.
Explain madam. Yourself. We will take an explanation.
Now, this is your window.
Please.
Thank you.
Vampires in this world are created from dying humans drinking vampire blood. So they have to be dying.
So traditional.
And then they drink the blood. Not traditional, because the traditional is that a vampire bites you,
and then you drink the blood of the vampire.
But literally, it's them, the vampire, cutting themselves and feeding that to the human.
Right.
It was a weird twist. So this is different from other vampire stories we read, like I just said. So what do you think about this concept, and how does it compare in your eyes to other vampire books we've read, which are like Twilight and Bride and My Roommate is a Vampire?
It fit for this world.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't lean into this is a vampire book, like those other novels. These are just vampires who live in this world. And I liked that. Mm-hmm. I liked that she didn't make it the primary focus of this. This isn't a vampire book. This is not a vampire book.
I disagree with you.
This is a book about a heist.
It is.
It's a book about a heist.
It is a book about a heist, but I disagree with you that it's not a vampire book.
I don't think it's a vampire book, though. But
I think it is, and the reason I think it is because initially when the book starts, we think it's just going to be like a little bit of vampire. Like, she's running this, like, underground. It's basically a speakeasy for vampires. Yeah.
At night.
At night, because that's when they come out. But...
Sorry, I had to.
But it goes really heavy into the vampire stuff because we have Mateo involved. They're at the
the Ethereum.
Ethereum, which is where all the vampires are. Like, there's a lot more to this story that's more vampire. And I don't want to give the spoiler yet, but like, we learn something later that it's like,
I wonder if my opinion will change after the second book.
Will you read the second book?
Abso-fucking-lutely. I need to know if you... Never mind.
We'll get there.
We'll get there. See, that's
I'm just surprised because you didn't particularly love this book.
But I didn't hate it. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it could have been a headspace thing. I really need to write. Like, that's all my brain has been thinking about.
Yeah.
And I've been stuck in this.
Well,
and
fortunately, when we finish filming this episode, we're a little bit ahead, so we can take a bit of a break.
Yeah, and I'll talk to you about that after we film.
Exactly. So for me, the comparison here, I thought it was an interesting way to have them be made vampires. I wish we got more... Like, I wish we had a chapter told from a vampire's perspective. Mateo is a big character in here. He's, like, one of the main characters in the heist. Mm-hmm. But we don't get any stories from his perspective. And I think that would have changed how I viewed the story. Because Arthi does not like the vampires. She wants no part in that other than to make money off of them in the speakeasy.
So, if I was her, okay? Mm-hmm. Hafsa Faisal. If I was Hafsa Faisal, I would start book two in the past from the point of view of Arthi's vampire dad.
Mm-hmm.
And then roll into everything else.
Yeah.
As like a to give us more of that. Because that's what I need to make it feel more vampire-y.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think, here's the thing I think about this book, and maybe this is an argument saying that it's not a vampire book. It could be anything. It doesn't have to be a vampire. It just needed to be an other, right? Yeah. It needed to be something that wasn't traditional. Well,
it's a symbolism for racism, right?
Vampires, well, sure. I mean, a lot of this book is.
Right. Vampires are another religion. Vampires are immigrants. Mm-hmm. Vampires, it's symbolism, right?
It could have been anything. Right. Really.
Right. They could have been gargoyles. They could have been flamingo people for all we know.
But I mean, it could be witches or wizards. I mean, honestly, I thought this was a book with magic. Like, I didn't know it was vampires.
This gives magic vibes, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. And it didn't cross my mind that was a cup of blood.
But the gun kind of gives off magic vibes, too, though.
Yeah, because the gun... I didn't even have a question about this, so let's talk about the gun. Because this gun...
What is it called? Excalibur?
Yeah, it's Oliver. Like the story from King Henry, or King Arthur, not Henry. It's like the story from King Arthur, like she pulls it from a stone.
Thothorald!
You're a jerk.
I'm goofy.
I'm not in a headspace to be goofy, I'm trying. I know. So she pulls it from a stone, and... Excalibur actually changes shape, so it can be like whatever she needs it to be. So it's like a barrette. Yeah,
it's a bandana. It's whatever she needs it to be.
A sword, a gun. Mm-hmm. Like, and she never reloads it, but it always has a bullet.
And it knows what she needs.
Mm-hmm. And the bullets can apparently kill vampires, which ends up being important at the end of the book.
Right, it's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if it becomes a plot hole later. Because
I just don't feel like we knew enough about... See, this is why this book needs to be more than a duology.
Yeah.
Like, I can't... You've built this beautiful world. I need more than just one more book.
Hafsa, my friend. I'm going to call you friend now. Because we're talking so deeply about this book and we feel so deeply about these characters.
Yeah.
My lady. If you could just... fix a couple problems for us, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Give us a mini book or a prequel. Mm-hmm. A prequel would be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I need a little bit more, Bubba. Just.
There's definitely setup for a prequel here. Like, we could have a novella that was a prequel. Yeah. She could release it just as an ebook. I don't know. There's ways to make this happen because.
And better.
Because here's the thing. If you want to look at Leigh Bardugo and you want to use Six of Crows, since this is compared so much to it, right. And we've already done that here, her books are double in length. It's only a duology, right. But it's double this right. size.
This thin of a book shouldn't have given me such a hard time as an audiobook, my guy.
This book is only, let's see, 336 pages.
I physically read Emma faster.
I know. Emma's book is so good. I cannot wait for you all to hear the episode next week, because we've already filmed it and it's Emma's book is so good. You guys are going to love it.
When I finished Emma's book, Piper goes, "You actually finished a physical read?" And I go, "Yeah." And she goes, "Good job, Mom. Good job."
Rude.
No, they're proud of me because I struggle with my dyslexia actively, daily.
No, I mean, like, you know how to read. You read all the time. And you read physical books, too.
Right, but I don't make it an active choice to pick up a physical book. If I'm reading for pod, I'm putting an audiobook on and I'm just doing. Because it's easier for my brain to multitask than to sit down and just be with a book.
Ooh, so this is a good side story for a conversation that Emma and I had at lunch today.
Okay.
So since we've just talked about her being on the pod and audiobooks, she is not an audiobook reader. She prefers to read with her eyes and not with her ears. And I love the way that she said that, because there are so many people that still do not think consuming audiobooks is reading. And I'm like, but it is.
Looking at you, Audible. What the fuck is that shit about?
And she said she does better with rereads because she can focus more and she already knows what's going to happen and whatever. And I was telling her that reading audiobooks is like reading audiobooks with your ears is like reading physical books with your eyes. You have to train your brain to do that. Mm-hmm. And so for me, when I started reading audiobooks, it was slow going. I started with more memoirs, like Yes, Please by Amy Poehler, which we covered in our first season, although we're never going to do nonfiction again.
It's weird.
It's weird to critique someone's life, essentially.
Yeah, how they interpret their own feelings.
Yeah,
how
it was
they
weird.
Feel about their life. It's weird.
So I started with Yes, Please, and I read some, I think it was Wishful Drinking by Carrie Fisher. I've read a few of hers. She does a great job narrating her audiobooks. Huh?
R.I.P. Carrie.
I know, man. I'm still heartbroken over it.
Same.
But I trained my brain to read audiobooks. And even though I am a big audiobook reader, the podcast has actually trained my brain to read audiobooks more. And I still prefer to read the physical book when I'm writing questions, because I was an English teacher. And so that's how I taught, right? I would read the book, I would write questions, and then I'd push them out to my students. So for my brain, that works better. But what I told her was, you do have to train your brain to read audiobooks.
Yeah. When I started, I literally started absorbing it like a sponge.
Mm-hmm.
When I realized I had that accessibility and that access to reading that was a struggle, I would read. If I read physical books, like I read the Twilight series and it took me a year.
Yeah, I remember.
To read all of them. And then it took me
several years. It was a year for the Hunger Games too, right?
Yeah, I physically read the Hunger Games and that took me several years. But I did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I do.
My kids have recently discovered audiobooks, and through the audiobook app that's completely legal that Tom and I have, we now have a tag in the audiobook app that is James. And so those ones get pushed to his version of the app, but he doesn't get access to everything because a lot of what we have on there is like very inappropriate for him. But he's discovered.
Look at you, Tom.
Why are there always big boobed women? I open the
rabbit
app
women. And it's like, I need to hear about the rabbit women, actually.
Yes, the rabbit women were crazy. They had big boobs and rabbit ears.
We'll talk about this on his episode.
Please do. He now has an AI that's downloading our audiobooks, and so it gets everything with big boobs. Like, it's just like, I open up our app and it's like, these are boobs. Like, these are boobs.
Like,
which boobs would you like today?
Yes, those are breasts. Thank you.
I'm like, what is happening? Anyway, so my kids have discovered audiobooks, and James really enjoys reading that way. And I think for neurodivergence, that is a really great way to consume books.
It makes it more accessible.
Yeah, absolutely.
And accessibility is key.
Absolutely. All right, so let's get back to this book. Sorry for the deviation there.
Like Blood at Spindrift, because having access to it was important to the vampires. See, look at me wrapping around.
There you go. It was interesting to me that feeding off of a human was illegal. Like, they were allowed to do it if somebody let them.
Right, if they're dating.
But I guess that makes sense, because if you like attacked consent. A human and fed off of them, that would be murder.
Consent is key, girls, guys, gays,
days. Don't let a man feed off of you without your consent.
You hear me, you little potatoes? That's better than calling them fuckers, though.
It's much better. I prefer it.
I love my little potatoes.
All right. Class plays a big part of this book. Vampires and humans alike are divided by class. So there are, you know, high class, upper class, wealthy humans and wealthy vampires as well.
Right.
Arthi and Jin run a well-known tea house, but the color of their skin makes them outcasts. There's actually a story, too, where Jin is from a very wealthy family, and he still almost doesn't get into the school that he goes to because they immediately want to say no based on his skin color. The Aetherium, right?
Aetherium.
Damn it. This is what happens when I don't know. The Aetherium only accepts the wealthiest vampires, even though feeding without consent is illegal, and all vampires need a bloodhouse to feed in, because basically they're not allowed to do it on the streets.
Or at home.
Right. Flick is very wealthy, but she chooses to become a criminal. What do you think about the decision to make class part of this? Was it needed when we already had like the race differences?
I think money is an important conversation. When it comes to showing social divides. And that was important. I think it was important for her as an author, or I'm assuming it was important for her as an author, not to just show how their struggles when it comes to color, race, and life that way, but how one's financial structure changes how they're viewed. I mean, look at our world right now.
Right.
Without getting into politics, groceries are out of like control. Gas prices are out of control. Everything's, and people are going day to day struggling to pay for basic things while billionaires are building themselves, plotting more houses in the moon or some stupid shit. I don't know. But what I do know.
To be fair, NASA is doing that.
But I mean, give it a couple weeks. We might have a billionaire running that. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. But what I do know is, what I do know. Is it was important for her to show both things.
And I think it made sense. Sorry, go ahead.
Especially you're right. It made sense for the time too, for the world she was setting up.
And I think it makes sense because if this is some sort of allegory for colonization, which for colonization, I feel like kids reading this might not get this, but us as 40-year-old women, we're like, yes, this is about Britain colonizing all these places.
Right. I mean, the whole
if you look at the museum, way they did it, what'd you say?
The museum, the whole thing about the museum.
Literally, they had stuff that was stolen from their museum, and it's people were making jokes like, "Did you look in the museum? Because that's where the stolen artifacts are."
Yeah.
But I think I think what's interesting is if you look at how, let's use how the U.S. was colonized, right? The white men are coming here. It doesn't matter that there are people who were in roles of leadership, like a chief, for example. That doesn't matter because the color of your skin puts you at a lower rate, right? Yep. You're lower. So then what happens is you have people who are white trying to find their own place in the social ladder. And this is basically what To Kill a Mockingbird is about, and why I will die on the hill that it should be fucking taught in school forever. But that's basically what she does here. Like,
and we looped back to it.
Good job. But that's basically very what she does here. It's like her saying, like, they don't see us as human. And then, of course, they're vampires, so they're not human.
But that's not what she meant, right? They don't see us as human. She was saying that to Jin. Because her and Jin have dark skin. And as soon as they walk into a room and somebody sees their dark skin, they're instantly scared. They're instantly petrified.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't matter that they're gangsters. And they're even white gangsters that do the same thing and get away with it.
Yes. And even though they run like what is arguably the best tea house in all of whatever the fuck it's called where they are, White Roaring.
All these hard names, and you name the town White Roaring.
I know, right? So even though they run what is essentially the best tea house, they aren't even in a good neighborhood. Like, yeah. They can't be in the high-class neighborhoods because of the color of their skin.
But, I mean, Jin was raised in them.
I know.
Until he was pushed out.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know that he was pushed out so much as, like...
Maybe I need to go round my score up to a 4. Maybe I need to.
I think you do. See, okay, so side note for you listeners. When I finished the book, which was like a few days ago, like a week ago, I texted you and I said that my rating had moved from a 3.5 to a 4 because of the ending. Mm-hmm. And like, I stand by that. Like, I gave it a 4 because the beginning was really good. The ending was really good. It gets messy in the middle, but it's a heist book.
The ending's what made me go down. I was sitting at a 4 and she left me holding my hands out going, what the fuck?
Because it's a duology. There's another book.
What the fuck?
To me, that was a perfect way to end it. If she tied a bow, why would I want to read the sequel?
No.
And you know what? I'll be interested to see if you actually do follow through on reading it. And here's why I want to see.
I barely can follow through with washing my hair most days. Come on.
This is why I want to... Fair. This is why I want to see. Because you still haven't read the second in the...
Anatomy.
Thank you. Immortality is the second one. You haven't read that.
Shit. I've been...
But...
I am struggling. I told you.
But... I said, we started last season with Powerless, and I said I would finish the series, and now that we are several months away from that, I'm never going to fucking finish that series. I don't even want to.
It was disappointing, don't worry.
I don't want to, because I didn't like the first book. Speaking of not liking the first book and still reading the whole series, side
what
note.
What are you still reading?
Sam and I are going to be reading Harry Potter. I got a copy from the library and we're going to start it today.
You're an asshole.
I know.
If Sammy asks you,
I love Harry Potter.
Tom, put that Leslie Knope clip in. That Leslie Knope quip where she's like, I don't like Harry Potter. What do you mean you don't like Harry Potter? You watch all eight movies. You made me watch all eight movies. Exactly!
I watched the first movie with Sam.
Sam is going to turn you into a Potterhead, and then you're going to be more mad because she's a TERF.
I'm going to like it because I'm going to read it with Sam. Because it's going to be a bonding
thing.
Oh,
you're going to love
it.
You're going to love the time. You're never going to be able to get that time back either. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
Something very special between
exactly.
you and Sam.
Exactly. James was like, well, maybe I'll just listen to the audiobook instead of reading with you guys. I was like, do you realize people pay me to read books aloud? Like, that's a job I do. Like, maybe you should just hang out with us. But we all took the Pottermore.
Audiobook, no offense, I love you, but you don't read the audiobook. The audiobook narrator, I think, is Stephen Fry. So...
Stephen Fry narrates the British version.
I got it on Audible.
Okay, whatever. Respectfully, fuck you. I do get paid to read to people.
I'm not saying you don't. I'm just saying you're not.
I'm very good at it. Okay, so anyway, we all took the Pottermore house sorting, and like, I already knew that I was a Ravenclaw. I took it a while ago, and I was a Ravenclaw, but I had a feeling that little Sammy Bug would be a Hufflepuff.
He's 100% a Hufflepuff with the Amali.
He's a Hufflepuff. I thought that James would be Gryffindor and Tom would be Slytherin. I had it backwards. James is a Slytherin.
Tom is 100% a Gryffindor.
And Tom is a Gryffindor.
Matt cheated on his first quiz so he could get into Hufflepuff because he wanted to prove he could get into it. And then we made him take it honestly. And guess what? Fucker's a Slytherin.
Tell me the truth. That's what you did, isn't it?
Yes, I'm a lying sack of shit.
I know you are, Slytherin ass.
I'm not. I'm a Hufflepuff. I'm just a mean fucking
You
one.
Can be a Slytherpuff, but you got Slytherin up in you.
I am my...
That sounded
so
really
my second house...
Slither on in, baby.
Okay, next question, because we are
what's your second
minutes
house?
Into this episode.
What's your second house?
Slytherin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I'm 90% Hufflepuff. 8% Slytherin.
What the fuck's the other 2%? That is not math.
One and one. No. 1% Ravenclaw 1%.
I can't remember my percentages, but I was pretty significantly Ravenclaw. That's and then my secondary was Hufflepuff.
Bye, Matt. You'll listen to this episode in a week.
All right, vampires in this book can remain undiscovered, right, and live totally normal lives. And Mateo is a well-known painter, but people don't know that he's immortal, which seems weird to me. Did this feel like a plot hole, or could this be the same as the Cullens hiding in plain sight?
I think it's wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey. The Cullens disappear.
I don't think that applies here. I think you need another thing.
Hear me out, okay? Mm-hmm. Robert Pattinson was in Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. So was David Tennant. Mm-hmm. Ex facto, Time Lords and vampires are in the same world.
That is a huge leap. They're not even in the same movie.
It's fine. Same worlds.
Oh my gosh. David Tennant's character is played by somebody else for most of the movie.
Also, technically, Robert Pattinson is still in Harry Potter. He's just dead.
He's dead.
So he's there. He's just bones.
You know, I never understood how the guy that David Tennant's character has taken over.
Barney Crouch?
Yes. How does he become somebody that they care about and love that comes back later in books? They never knew that guy.
I know. Isn't that upsetting?
Fucking to fall Harry in Potter.
Love? Isn't that upsetting? You fall in love with one person and then you realize you're being played?
I feel like you're making an analogy there.
I'm not. I didn't know where it was going and I just kept on the hard gas because that's where I was.
Let's talk about the heist.
Sometimes I just talk and wait to see where the words go themselves.
They don't usually go to good places. Let's talk about the heist.
Okay.
There are several things that have to happen in order to steal the ledger.
Right.
So basically, the crew needs tokens to pass security. Flick mm-hmm. needs to add their forged token IDs to the Arthurium? Arthurium's book. I'm going to say what I want to say. Arthurium. Arthurium's book. Jin needs to steal the key to the vault, and then Arthi and Laith have to actually steal the Ram's Ledger. What do you think about the heist in this book? And I have a bell ringer for this one, too, so go ahead.
It was very Ocean's 11. Mm-hmm. Very much, okay, you need to get this person and this person and this person mm-hmm. and this person, and if you don't get them and they don't mm-hmm. do their job right, nothing mm-hmm. works. And it's very much a high wire act. I struggled to pay attention to it, though, for some mm-hmm. reason. And I don't know why. It was the main focus of the story, and it didn't pull me back in until we were flipped in the room.
Yeah.
Behind the bookshelf, you know? Like,
this is where I feel like we needed more words in this book. Like, we needed more length, because I don't feel like...
Yes.
The build up to this and what happens after this was so amazing. And then this part, which should be the meat, it wasn't.
Yeah.
And for me, the bell ringer was, how are these well-known people going to sneak in? Like, even Mateo, who is a vampire, has said he doesn't want to be a part of the Aetherium. I can't say it. I give the fuck up. He said he doesn't want to be a part of the Aetherium, so he doesn't even have a valid coin.
An active coin, yeah.
Everyone knows who Jin is. She runs the underground speakeasy of a bloodhouse.
She has magenta hair. She has magenta hair. She is Indian and has magenta hair.
And there is like a small nod that like... Oh, we knew who you were, and we knew this coin wasn't going to work. But, like, all those motherfuckers were well-known. You're telling me Flick, who is the daughter of, like, the most prominent shipping whatever the fuck? Merchant! Baron. Merchant! That's there the you word! Go. You're telling me no one knows who she is?
Baroness. I just... It's like the vampires are, like, sitting there with their drinks and going, let's see how it plays out.
Right! Like... It doesn't matter that you have their coins in the ledger. They know who the fuck they are.
Oh, silly little humans. Continue on. Like, what? Why? Why? Why have all these rules about not letting people in if you're just gonna fucking let them in?
And that is why this book needed more meat, because this part didn't make any sense and this was the main part. This is where I dropped down to a 3.5 and was like, what the fuck? But exactly. Then I came back up because the ending was amazing. All right, because of the heist, the crew learns that the Ram and Flick's mom are working together to kidnap vampires and basically use them to fight wars. What did you think about this plot twist?
I knew that one was up no fucking good.
Oh, I mean, of course.
I didn't trust her because she treated her child like an accessory. She didn't treat her as a human.
Mm-hmm.
So I never was going to trust her.
No, me either.
But the fact that Flick kept going back to her mom.
Mm-hmm.
Child, how many times do you have to get kicked in the teeth before you understand?
I feel like I can't answer that.
Seriously. To that, honestly. Agreed. To your bell ringing issue.
I mean, we kind of knew that the vampires were missing because that is like a part of the story. And if you actually do read the synopsis of the actual book, not the one that I so eloquently gave, vampires going missing is supposed to be a major plot point. It isn't, but it's supposed to be.
Right.
And the fact that she was using them as weapons, like, because they were essentially starving the vampires while they were on the ships to go to the island and then releasing them.
They were making them human fucking savages. Mm-hmm. They were turning them into monsters.
Mm-hmm.
It's so disgusting.
It was like a zombie bomb. I guess a vampire bomb, but still.
It's a comparison for, honestly, it's a comparison for racism, for slavery, right?
Yeah, because for sure.
It's abusing you for the one thing you're known for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's disgusting because they're people too. You know what I mean? They have the personalities and minds and souls and whatever.
But this is another example of where we needed more depth. And I hope we get it in the second book because we don't really know as much about the colonization as we do. Like, it happens at the end. We learn more about the colonization at the end, about how we learn Arthi's story. And that's really how we learn. But I mean, some shady shit. All right. So we learn pretty late in the book that Arthi had another family before Jin. And I don't mean her parents. This was after her parents are both dead.
This woman, she's got secrets on top of secrets.
I mean, that's kind of what she does. So what we don't know is that her family is the head of the Aratheum. I don't care. I'm giving up. And his name is Penn. And were you surprised to find out that she had this connection?
I audibly said, and I almost text you, bitch, you could have just fucking walked in here.
Right.
You could have walked through the front door.
You could have just been like, hey, Penn, I need some of those, like, coins so we can get in.
Plot line ruined.
But she didn't want that connection anymore. She wanted to not be part of him. And the reason is because she has a secret. Because
she's hiding where she is.
And who she is, spoilers, she's half human and half vampire.
Which, so I don't understand this. I never understood what they were saying.
So this is where the confusion of, like, how they become vampires gets into place. Because Penn tells her that she was too much alive when she drank the vampire's blood. But Arthi tells the story that she was dying when her mom took her to the healer, who was a vampire. Right. So she drank the blood.
But she wasn't dying enough?
She wasn't dying enough. But here's the thing that I want to know, and the reason why I have to read the second book. I know you want to know if she's still alive, because, spoiler, she might not be. I mean, I'm sure she is, because she's on the cover of the second book, but, you know.
But
I want to know if Jin becomes a vampire, because he is dying, and she feeds him her blood. And she's only half vampire, so does he become a vampire?
I also
is he a quarter vampire? Is it like the Cherokee blood that gets diluted? My book club just read Nikki Payne's Sex, Lies, and Sensibility, and that became a topic we were discussing of how like everyone has Cherokee heritage.
Right. We're all natives.
Right.
But it's. I need to know: are Jin's parents just captive somewhere doing research for the vampires?
I have a feeling that is what is happening.
And that's more upsetting to me. I thought it was the government killing them for being well-to-do people of color, but
I never thought that. I thought it was for their research.
I thought it was because
I don't think they're doing it by choice. Like, I sort of picture like in Breaking Bad where they get like held captive and they're forced to like make the meth.
Right, but also
except like, they're making vampire shit.
Right, but like also they just abandoned their kid. Like, I guess they didn't get a choice in that.
I don't think they had a choice. Like, I literally think the Ram had the place torched and had them kidnapped, and probably Jin was supposed to die in that fire, and just he wasn't home.
Right. But he's scarred from it, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And literally and physically. Like,
that's
literally
what I was about to say. Yeah.
All right, so at the end of the book, Arthi makes a plan to expose the Ram once and for all, but it turns out that the Ram is actually Flick's mom.
Bitch.
And the final chapter is Jin is shot, but Arthi attempts to save him by feeding her blood. We do not find if it works out. Do you think it worked out? Do you think he's going to be a vampire? Do you think he's going to live?
I think what's going to happen is Mateo's going to save everyone.
Well, he can't save Pen. Pen is for sure dead.
Oh, yeah. That broke me.
Oh, I know. It was so sad.
That broke me.
He took a Excalibur bullet from Laith. Right? Laith is the one that shot him, right?
But it was intended for...
It was intended for Arthi.
And he was after that fucking gun the whole time.
Yeah.
Piece of shit. Okay. I will fix my rating on StoryGraph 2 of 4.
3.75 if you want, but I think it's worth the 4. I'm never going to force you to change your rating, okay? I'm not going to be like someone that does that.
You know who you are.
You know who you are. I have to tell you something about that.
And I know you're hate listening, bitch.
I have to tell you something about that off pod because it's not something I can say on here.
Okay.
All right. I'm interested to see because I don't know if he could have saved her or if she could have saved him when she doesn't have the full vampire blood.
I don't think her blood could save him. I don't know. But it could keep him alive long enough to get him to a vampire, maybe.
Yeah. Well, there are plenty of vampires there. They're literally at the vampire house.
Right.
Maybe he becomes like Snow White and he's just like unconscious and waiting for true love's kiss.
I mean, we stole from King Arthur. We got vampires in here. We got King Arthur in here. We got Peaky Blinders. Sure. We're doing Ocean's 11. Sure. Let's just fucking add Snow White.
Love it.
Let's do it.
Love it. Sounds good.
Add to the line.
Perfect.
No notes.
Also at the notes. Also at the end, Arthi and Laith shoot each other. We don't know if Laith survives, but Arthi is picked up by the wolf. And the wolf is a story that, like, is very minor in here, but the wolf is the one that actually started the hatred of the vampires. We don't find out if it worked saving her. So do you think she lived? Do you think Arthi lives? Does Laith live?
I have so many questions.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that didn't work. There we go. I have so many questions.
Mm-hmm.
I have so many questions.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no pages left.
There are no pages left.
There are
until
no
September
pages left.
When the sequel comes out.
We might have to put it on pod.
I mean, maybe we can reach out to Hafsa Faisal and see if she'll come on.
Oh, that's...
I would love that.
Me too, because...
Because I really enjoyed this book.
I did too, but I'm also mad at it.
But to me, the ending of this book was like a classic season finale. All the shit happens and you have to wait.
This is early. This is Shonda Grace. You know what I mean?
This is Shonda Grace.
This is Shonda Grace.
This is hospital shooting or
magic
plane crash.
This is a cut LVAD. This is ooh, yeah. Speaking of medical dramas, I am so obsessed with The Pitt.
I don't have HBO. I can't watch it unless you want to share your password and I can log in.
Maybe Tom can do secret things.
What?
Doesn't Tom have secret ways?
He does. He does. But we need to finish Outlander first.
Oh, y'all finish Outlander. We still haven't
watched the rest of the like back season that just came out. Like, we haven't watched any of those. Mm-hmm. So we need to, because that's the end of the show. I need the second book. I need the second book so I know what happens, because I don't know. I mean, Arthi clearly, in my opinion, clearly lives because she's on the cover of the next book.
Who's the wolf?
That's what I want to know. Because are we introducing a whole new character, or do you think it's somehow also the ram?
Off the cuff theory, the wolf is her mom.
Is Arthi's mom?
Yeah.
Who's dead? No.
We assume is dead.
She literally saw her mom in a pool of blood and it made her thirsty. Like, she wanted to go eat her mom.
Shonda taught me never to trust any writer. That is one thing Shonda Rhimes has taught me. Not to trust anyone.
Shonda Rhimes remains my favorite villain of all time.
Shonda Rhimes is probably one of my favorite writers, and she's never written a book. She is...
You don't have to write a book to be a good writer.
I mean, she has written a book, but it's nonfiction. But
Is this episode over an hour?
It's because we talk about all the things. Oh, it's a good episode. It's a good episode. All right. But I will do a Shonda rant for TikTok. How about that?
That'll work.
That'll work.
Next week. Do we have anything else that you wanted to say about this one?
No.
All right. Next week, we have author Emma Berry back again to talk about her newest book, Bold Moves, which actually comes out in April. Yay! So I will pre-warn everybody. We don't usually. Yeah, mine's over here. Right there. Right there. We don't usually give spoilers when we have an author on, especially when it's a brand new book, because we don't want it to ruin it for others. But this book, we do have a few spoilers in this episode. It's still worth reading. They're light spoilers, but they're important to discuss because they're a part of the plot and you can't really
save the episode for after you read.
Definitely read this one though, because it is really good. She's so smart. Then we have our April books, which will be posted to social media probably the week
this episode. The month April.
Well, some of them are my books.
Fine. Technicality. And you own some of them. So April's books in April?
Do I own any of the April books? I don't think I do. You'd think I'd have it memorized by now, but I shall don't. Okay, so for April, we're reading Shark Heart. I don't own that. Ministry of Time, don't own that. Wedding People, I did buy Wedding People because there was a huge wait list at the library. Could not get it. I had to break my book buying ban for the Wedding People. The God of the Woods, which I got from the library, and A Wizard's Guide to Defensive Baking, which my husband's going to come back on that episode. And I have that book because it's on the totally legal audiobook app that we have.
Yeah. Look how pretty that is.
I have heard amazing things about The God of the Woods.
I am so fucking excited about this book.
Mm-hmm. I know. I am too.
So excited about this book.
Oh my gosh. That's all I have.
I got nothing else.
All right. Bye, guys. See you next week. Bye. Thank you for joining us on Book Besties. Don't forget to like and subscribe. The views discussed here are those of April and Molly and not those of anyone else. Today's book was A Tempest of Tea by Hafsa Faisal. Your book besties are Molly Biggs and April Watkins, editing by Thomas Watkins, and music is Sleep Sweetly by Prigida. Don't forget to follow the Book Besties on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you'd like to contact the Book Besties, please email us at bookbestiespod@gmail.com or visit our website, bookbestiespodcast.com. You can support the Book Besties by joining our Patreon at Book Besties Podcast. Until next time, besties, get lost in your favorite book.